this year, we've tried to make an even more specific, intentional effort to look at the life of Jesus, to see what he's doing, and then to walk in that way. So today, what we're talking about is Jesus did good on the Sabbath. So what does the word Sabbath mean? Well, we'll start from that. It comes from a Hebrew two words that are put together, but it means to cease, to end, or to rest. It's talking about rest, and that's what we're looking at. We're going to do a quick rundown of some Old Testament history stuff. So, Genesis 1 and 2, the very beginning of the Bible. We see that account says that God creates the world in 6 days. He gets done with it, looks at it, and says, you know what? It's good. And then on the seventh day, God rests from his work. Fast forwarding in history, God finds a man that we know of as Abraham, and he says, Abraham, I am going to bless you so that you can be a blessing to the rest of the world. All the nations of the world will be blessed through you, which eventually we find in Jesus. But there's this man, Abraham, from him he has son, and then there's more children and more children, and there's this group of people that are the Jews or the Hebrews, and they eventually end up moving to Egypt. They become slaves there for something like 400 years. And then God sends a messenger to the people. We know him as Moses often. God sends a message. God does miracles. And the people are eventually set free. And they're able to leave. And then as they're walking to the place where God said, now I'm going to give you this new homeland, he gives them what's called the law, the Torah. And one of the things in the Torah is this. So keep the Sabbath day holy. Now, so that's your short history lesson, because we're going to come back to some of these points. So what are the reasons that we're told to keep a Sabbath? Because God says, keep a Sabbath. Well, why is that? Here are two explicit reasons that we're told. Both times that we're given what's called the Ten Commandments, once in Exodus and one in Deuteronomy, we're told why God talks about this. In Exodus 20, verse 8 through 11, as he's talking about the Sabbath, he says, remember the Sabbath to keep it, because God did his work in 6 days, and on the seventh day, he rested. So we see that the Sabbath is supposed to be a reminder of creation. It's supposed to be a reminder that God did his work. Two different parts of that. One of them is this. We're told, hey, this is what you should do because God gave you an example, and then now live that example. Does that sound familiar? Jesus' life challenge, hopefully some of you catch that. This idea of we look at God, we look what he did, and then we say, oh, that's a good example. Let's follow his example. So creation, we see this is God's example. He works, he takes a day off. The second part is that we see that God was the one who completed his work. You see, creation, how many of you created the world? None of us. God didn't need us to do it. Creation was God's work. And when he got done with it, he said, it's good. And then he rested. And it was this idea of God completed his work. Didn't need us to do it. And that's something that we're going to see in Sabbath, is this idea of us seeing that God has done his work. And it's not that there's nothing for us to do, but we aren't necessary to do the work of God. And sometimes we need to rest and realize that God has already done his work. We aren't the ones trying to make it all happen. The second reminder that we're given is it's a reminder of salvation. In Deuteronomy, instead of mentioning this whole creation thing of God worked and then God rested, he says, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, because you should remember that you were slaves and God brought you out of slavery. He was the one who did it. So creation was God's work. Salvation is also God's work. It's all about, I was the one who did the miracles to get you out of your slavery. I was the one who sent the messenger to do that. And so there's this idea of freedom. And that's really cool that they're supposed to take time to realize, you know what? You're free. In our modern world, we have, in a lot of cultures, this idea of something like a 40-hour work week. 5 days a week, 8-hour days. Some are like 32, 34, 36, whatever. And some people a little more. But that's sort of like, oh, that's a good conception of how long a work week usually is. Do you know when that came around? Trust me, it hasn't been most of history. It's like 1920s, 1930s is when that even starts showing up and people start going, oh, maybe we should work less. Before that point, a lot of the world considered, you have 7 days a week, you do 7 days of work. And who cares about your hours? You just work until the work is done. You don't have rights of how many hours you're supposed to work. And trust me, if you're a slave, even less so, you're not given this choice. And so when God tells the Israelites, okay, 6 days you work, but the seventh day you take off as a reminder that you're no longer slaves. You don't have to work all the time, every day. You have been set free. Slaves, they don't get to choose a day off. God says, I've given you a day off because you're mine. And the weird thing was, at the time, Greek people thought that the Jews were lazy. You take one whole day off out of every seven? Lazy. Today we go, you only get one day off? That's horrible. So from our standpoint, we're looking and go like, oh, they're not getting that much. From their standpoint, God was actually being really nice by telling them, look, I'm your God, you're my people, and part of what that means is you sit down and you rest a day. And it did set them apart. In the book of Ezekiel, chapter 20, verse 12, God says through his prophet that I gave them the Sabbath as a sign to let them know that I, the Lord, sanctify them. I'm the one who set them apart. Again, this is all about what God has done. And in this idea of he's given salvation is this idea of he's given provision, that he's taking care of their needs. A part of the story that I left out in the history section, right, is that as these people are living in the desert, they say, we don't got no food in the desert. We're hungry. And God says, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you this stuff that they end up calling manna, where you'll be able to go out every day, and there's just going to be this coriander-like substance on the ground. You go, you pick it up, you make your food, you eat it. You have to do it every day. You can't save it for the next day, because if you do, it'll be molded and rotten and maggoty. Except, on that day where I told you to do a Sabbath, you're not going to get any of that manna. You're not going to get any of that coriander stuff. You have to get double on the day before. There's this whole idea that God is saying, I'm going to provide for you enough for every day. And on the day when I don't want you to be doing work, I'm going to provide enough for you ahead of time so that you're not going to run out. It's so easy, and it seems like so often we get stuck in this idea that my job is what provides for me. I don't really look to God for my provision. It's, yeah, I have this job, or I have this contract, or I have these things. And then when you stop having that, you start realizing, oh, wait, I actually do rely on God for stuff. He really is the one that needs to be the one providing for me. I think that's a big reason why so often it's hard for us to really rest. Even though we have a weekend, we have days off, we don't just stop to remember creation and to remember salvation because we're so busy doing our other stuff, because we're the ones providing for ourselves, making sure everything gets done, making sure that the lights get put in, making sure that the garbage gets taken out, making sure that all this happens. And sometimes we don't stop. So those are the reasons why God directly says, take a Sabbath as a reminder of my creation, as a reminder of my salvation. But there are also two sort of implicit things. It's not in the verse itself, but in all of the context around it, where God has put this idea of a Sabbath in the middle of lots of other things, which makes us think, there's probably a reason why those are all connected, right? There's two of them I want to bring out. One of them is this. He did it so that we wouldn't get caught up in serving idols and serving other gods. At the time, often when you look through the various prophetic writings and you see God getting mad at the people because he's like, you're not honoring my Sabbaths, all in front of it and behind it is always, and you're serving idols. It's like God said, if you don't take time to stop and remember me, if you don't take time to stop and look what I've done, you find yourself often running after other things. And an idol, the idea is this, the affection that God deserves, you're giving it to something else. And so today, even if you don't have a little Buddha in your window or this or that, we often have given our attention and our affection to other things because we haven't stopped to think about God. We've turned our focus on everything else. And so God wants us to have this time of rest, this time of, I don't work, I look at his work and what he's done, so that we won't fall into this danger of serving idols, of running after other things. But then the other one is also really interesting to me. The second danger was this, and that was the danger of serving God. One of the times when he really talks about the Sabbath, they're still in the desert, and they're going to be building a tabernacle, this place where it's going to be like the meeting place of God's presence. And so he gives them all of these instructions, like, okay, here are the two guys, Bezalel and Oholiab. They have the skills. I've put my spirit on them so they can build it. And this is the kind of wood you need, and this is the kind of colors you need in this, and this is my interior decorating. God is an interior decorator who has this all mapped out in his mind. This is how I want my house to be put together. Can I get an amen from the ladies? But he says, remember to keep a Sabbath. Don't be building this tabernacle for me. Even though you think, oh, I'm doing a good thing for God. I'm working for God. He's saying, I'm telling you, take a day where you're not working for me. Because sometimes our trying to serve God is more just our serving ourselves or trying to find something to do. That's part of what God was wanting to get with in the Sabbath is there are times, it's not that he hasn't given us work to do, that he hasn't created us for good works that he planned ahead of time, but he's saying this, there are times where you don't need to be serving me, you need to be remembering me and looking to me because I did the work. It's not all based upon us. And so in the Psalms, which is this book in the Bible that has these songs, one of them, we're told at the beginning, like, this is a psalm for the Sabbath. Psalm 92. And so as I was reading it, it made sense to me that multiple times, you see things like this. You, O Lord, have made me glad by your work, the works of your hands. I sing for joy. How great are your works, O Lord. As this guy sits and thinks about the Sabbath, what am I supposed to be doing today? This is the song that comes out from him. God, you've done the work. Your works are incredible, and I love that about you, and it makes me happy. Sabbath should be a day of joy. Another psalm, Psalm 46:10, says this, be still and know that I am God. Not do junk and know that I am God. Sometimes it's be still. Take your time to realize God's work was creation. God's work was salvation. He has created you, and he is the one who gives you freedom, the one who sets you free. Now, there was the flip side. There were really serious consequences that God says in relation to this. In the Torah, in the law, is if you don't keep the Sabbath, you kill that person. And we do have an example in Numbers where someone is put to death because they didn't keep the Sabbath. So God was saying, I'm serious about this. I'm serious about this. So that's some of the stuff in the Old Testament. But I said, who are we talking about? Jesus is our focus, right? So we're going to hop forward to Jesus. What does Jesus do? How does Jesus then follow this? Matthew 12, there's an example of Jesus is walking through a grain field with his disciples on a Sabbath day. It says these guys are hungry, so they start to grab bits of the grain, take it out, rub it in their hands, and they're eating it. They're hungry, they're getting food. Now, there are some Pharisees who were very religious people at the time who were the ones that felt like they needed to be the watchdogs of this is what you are or are not supposed to do. And so the Pharisees come up to Jesus and said, Jesus, don't you know what your disciples are doing? What they're doing is unlawful to do on this day. It's sort of like, Jesus, these are your students, and if they're doing it bad, it looks bad on you as well. I mean, if you're in a school and all the students coming out of the school have bad attitudes or bad characters or all those things, then it looks bad on the school itself. That's sort of what they're doing here. They're going up to Jesus and saying, your students, they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and this is supposed to look bad on Jesus. And Jesus disagrees. He gives them an example from the Old Testament where he says, okay, there's this guy, King David. You all love him. There's a time where he did something where his men were hungry, and he found a way to get them food that you think was an unlawful way to do it. But then in it, as he's speaking, he says, look, if you had really understood it correctly, you would know this is what God wants. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. If you had known that, you would not have condemned the guiltless. So often, we get so stuck in our rules, and we think that the most important thing that we do is giving sacrifices, doing our Sabbath thing, or doing whichever one it is. And he's saying, okay, mercy comes before that. It's not that God doesn't ask us to do work, saying that over and over again, but he says mercy is more important than your sacrifice. And you're pointing fingers at other people and trying to get them in trouble. That's not a sacrifice to God for you. That's you not showing mercy. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Jesus is saying, I'm the one who came up with the Sabbath. Their attention is on what they can do, on their work. Again, the idea goes back to, God said, I'm giving you a Sabbath so that you won't work. And they had made the rules so it was, oh, here's how I can do my work. And Jesus still says, you still don't get it. It's not about your work. In Mark 2, it's the same story, and Jesus has this, where he says, the Sabbath was made for humankind, not humankind for the Sabbath, so that the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. See, man was not created so that he would give God a good reason to make rules. Sometimes we think that, like, God just wants to put rules on somebody, so let's make people so we can give them rules. Instead, God created boundaries so that we would be able to live a healthy lifestyle, that we would be able to honor him, that we would be able to follow him. And so he says, which is more important to you? You think the rules are more important. I think the humankind is more important. And then after this, there's another story. It's sort of like the sequel. In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they're all put back to back. So he first has this example. You're walking through a grain field. They get it. And then a second one so that people are already, like, they're realizing this is what we're talking about here. And in the second example, Jesus goes into a synagogue on the Sabbath. There's a man who has a withered hand. And the Pharisees are looking at Jesus, and we're told that they're looking for a reason to get mad at him. It's not like, oh, we'll be fair on our judgment. It's we're looking for a reason to get unhappy with Jesus. And they're watching to see if Jesus is going to cure this man. Jesus isn't one who normally shies away from such things, so he tells the man, come forward, come up in front of everybody. And then he says to them, is it lawful to do good or to do harm on the Sabbath? To save life or to kill? Jesus is really good at asking questions, asking the right questions. He sometimes asks very leading questions, but that's because he's leading you towards a good answer. But he says, the guys were silent. And he looked around at them with anger. He was grieved at their hardness of heart and said to the man, stretch out your hand. I rarely ever hear people remember this part of Jesus gets angry and that leads to a man getting healed. If you're going to get angry, at least get angry at the right thing and then use your anger to bless somebody else. But Jesus says, stretch out your hand. He stretches it out and his hand is restored. And then the Pharisees went out and immediately conspired against him of how they might destroy him. Jesus heals a guy and they're going, how am I going to kill this guy? How am I going to kill this guy? But if you're stuck in this mentality that you're supposed to keep a Sabbath, you don't do it this way, you're supposed to die, then it makes sense that that was their biggest concern because they're looking at the wrong thing. And Jesus doesn't do this just once. There are at least five different times where Jesus does some sort of a miracle on this Sabbath day. Once it's a woman who's crippled, another time it's a guy who has dropsy. Another time it's a guy who seems like he's paralyzed in some kind of form, that he's lying next to a pool in Bethesda. And another time it's a man who's been born blind. All of them, Jesus heals on the Sabbath, and then people get mad at him and go, why did you do something good for this person? The one that's, I like the way it's worded, is this woman who was crippled. When Jesus heals her, he does the same thing where he asks a question of the people, like, hey, let's look at this question. And the question he asks them then is, this woman has been bound by Satan. Isn't it good to set her free? And it's bringing them back to why God said, what's the whole point of Sabbath? It's a reminder of God in creation. It's a reminder of God's salvation, that he set them free. And so he's saying, look, this was the day that we're supposed to celebrate God setting people free. How much more awesome is it to then set someone free that day? It seems like the perfect time for it. Because it's that time to be set free from your own shame, to be set free from the chains that maybe you've put on yourself or others have put on you, the shame that you've held. It can be a perfect day to be free from that. So I said that you have this first story of the grain and they're eating it. The second one is this woman who has, or this man who has a crippled hand. But in the book of Matthew, there's actually a trilogy in this story. Matthew put three stories back to back to back that are all supposed to point towards the same truth. So here's what he said in the other one that comes right before it. Matthew 11. Jesus says, come to me, all you that are weary and carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. He uses the word rest. You get that, right? He's saying, where do you find rest? In me. And then the stories come after it of the Sabbath, this idea of rest. Jesus is pointing to himself, and Matthew wants to make sure that you get this idea that the Sabbath is not just about humankind. The Sabbath eventually comes around to Jesus. And Jesus says, I'm Lord of the Sabbath. I'm the one who's the master of it. It's about me. And then the people who follow Jesus later, Hebrews chapter 3, hits a similar topic. Hebrews 3 and 4 goes over the subject a lot, but I'll take just small parts of it. We've become partners of Christ if we hold our first confidence firm to the end. It says, if Joshua had given them rest, and Joshua was the leader after Moses who was bringing the people out of the desert, out of their slavery, and now into this land, it says, if he had been able to give them rest, God would not speak later about another day to give rest. So then a Sabbath rest still remains for the people of God. For those who enter God's rest also cease from their labors as God did from his. So he starts with this idea, Jesus, Christ, he's the one who is really where you get your rest. It wasn't from following these rules, it wasn't from these other things, or else God wouldn't have kept saying, you're going to need this time of rest. But sometimes we just don't really get this in church. We don't understand it in some way because we, again, there's this cult of Sunday morning where we think it's about if we come together as a community and we hear a message, that then we're all set for good. And if you read through Hebrews 3 and 4, the author talks very directly about this. He said, there's the people, the Hebrews. They all heard the message, heard it over and over. They all saw the miracles. They got to hear the God stories. They came together. They were part of the community. But they didn't enter God's rest because they didn't couple it with belief and obedience, an obedient faith that walked into it. Yeah, they were a part of it. They could show up. Sounds a whole lot like a Sunday morning to me. They can show up at the church meeting. They can hear the message. They can be a part of the group, but they can still miss out on really having the rest of God if they don't put it together with really focusing on Jesus. So if you know that you haven't come to some sort of rest in Jesus, let's talk. If you know that you have come to a rest in Jesus, then what do we do after that? Well, our power verse from last week that fits very well with this, where Jesus is saying, I guarantee you the truth, whatever you did for one of my brothers or sisters, no matter how unimportant they seemed, you did for me. That's why Jesus, on the Sabbath, is healing these people that the religious ones are saying, you're not important enough to get healed now. Do that later. And Jesus says, this man should have a good hand now. This woman should have a whole healthy body now. Why do you push them off? So we should do good on the Sabbath just as Jesus did, no matter how unimportant the person seems. But Jesus' life step is take time this week to have nothing to do but give attention to God. If you can get that 10 minutes, 30 minutes, one day, even better, where you just take the time that you can get, where you can just give God your attention and listen. And if God gives you something to do, then do it. If God doesn't, just keep your focus on him. And don't see it as, oh, I have to do another thing just to rest in front of God. Because then it's back to your whole idea of work. Instead of realizing that it's meant to be a joy. As the last thing today, I wanted to read from a girl named Keisha. She used to come to this church for a while, and she was sent by this church, as well with others, to be a missionary in Wales and has been helping with a church plant there. And so every now and again, she sends back these updates. Hey, this is what's going on in Wales. This is what's been happening. And when I read this email from her, I think it was about a week and a half ago, I went, wow, that fits. So for those of you who know her, hopefully you'll be able to hear her personality in her writing. If you don't know her, don't laugh at me. I'm just trying to read it like she would say it. So at Capital City, this church, we were challenged to spend some time listening to God and to hear if he would place something or someone on our hearts to pray for or talk to. And this is during the church service. It's not go do it afterward, but like we're going to take time during church to hear if God says something. If we did get a word, then his follow-up challenge would be to get up and do it. So that's what we did. We spent some time praying silently, and once that had passed, we were given the opportunity to share whatever God placed on our hearts at the time. My friend Helen, who you should know is a very shy person, braced herself, took the microphone, and shared that she felt God was urging her to go to the hospital. Not because she was ill and this was God revealing that. No, not that. It was because he had someone there she was supposed to pray for. She knew where in the hospital to go, but she didn't know what this person would look like or what their name would be. She just knew to stand in the smoker's area. And she felt like this person would have some sort of head injury. So as Helen finished explaining this to the congregation, she set to leave. She asked if anyone wanted to join her, and I accepted. On our way to the hospital, which is just around the corner from where we have church, we felt very nervous, but in a good way. I was excited to see how this would play out. And Helen was expectant, but knew that even if no one was there, the fact that we were willing to get up and try to obey would encourage others still at church to do the same. So we arrived at the smokers area of the hospital and started scoping the field. Ooh, maybe it's that person or that one. Not a minute later, and a woman walked up to us and said, "Are you girls Christians?" "Yes, yes we are." "I am too." She remarked how much she loved my hair and my skin. "No offense," she said to Helen, "but black is beautiful," she said to me. Then Helen asked her why she was at the hospital, and she informed us that she stupidly overdosed on her medication again and had to see the doctor so he would get it out. In line with this conversation, she started to tell us that she felt very lonely where she lived and that her head was filled with terrible thoughts and that she felt attacked spiritually. Now, you can imagine this was a lot to take in, but God led the conversation very well. And I asked her what her name was. She said, "Helen." I had to laugh. My friend's name is Helen, for those that have forgotten already. As soon as we heard this, my friend Helen, who we'll call Big H from now on to avoid confusion. So Big H stated that their name means light. And she said, "I know it can seem ironic at times because of the depression that surrounds you, but you have to hold on to the meaning of your name. It made so much sense why we were here. It was definitely no coincidence. Helen needed to know that God was listening and had sent people just for her." We told her this, of course, and she was dumbfounded to think that just minutes before, God had sent us there to talk and pray with her. So we spent some time praying with her in the smoking area. As a token of our meet, I gave her my cross necklace, which she seemed to like. I told her it came all the way from Israel, where Jesus was born, which is true, by the way. This made her love it even more, and as I put it around her neck, she clasped it even harder, saying she would never take it off. As much as I loved the necklace, I realized it would remind her of the day God sent some people to talk with her. I pray she never forgets his love for her and the fact that he hears her cries every day. Big H and I walked away feeling gobsmacked. God had done it again. I shouldn't have been surprised, but I was. I was amazed at how faithful and quick God was to hearts that want to serve. He made it so easy for us as well. We didn't have to go looking for the person. She came up to us. "Are you Christians?" God gave that to us on a silver platter, if I'm honest. And not only that, but her name was Helen. Just in case we doubted that this was the person we were meant to meet, God was like, "Here you go, similar names." He is just so, so good, you guys. He never ceases to amaze. We walked back to inform the others on the adventure God took us on for those 20 minutes. It reminds us, even us Christians that know God's truth, it reminds us that he's alive, that he is communicating constantly and is always ready to send us out. When it comes to souls, God is not lounging on the couch. He's on the edge of his seat, ready for action. I love this testimony because it shows us that we don't need to move across borders to do God's work. It can be as close as next door. Our God is not dormant. He's not tired nor old. So let's stop treating him like he is. I pray that for each and every one of you, God shows you something amazing this week, this month, the rest of your lives, something unexpected, something challenging, something to rejoice over.